and old thoughts. They speak as if they were 10 years younger. So the answer then, I think we've answered that. How can a change in knowledge be considered to be a change that occurs in space? It cannot be considered as taking place in space. Therefore, there is no such change. Next question. When God is not subject to time, God is never subject to time or to anything else. When God is not subject to time, would it be appropriate then? Let's cross out the word then, because that's inappropriate to use the word then. Would it be appropriate to talk of a plan of God? God cannot have a plan because it would include a present and a future. So the argument seems to be God needs to make a plan in very much the same way as we make a plan. And since when we make plans, we have to think of the future. I make a plan. Say, if this building is so high, it's going to collapse. So I must make a plan. But if God has to make a plan in that way, then he is not all-knowing. Again, we are denying God's omniscience. What is the answer to the question? The question is, the answer is, it is always all right to speak of the plan of God. But what does that have to do with space and time? By plan, we should understand the sequence of events as they unfold one after the other in the world we see around us. That's what we mean by plan. We do not mean a plan that God goes by. It's the plan of God as we see it, and I'm using the word see correctly, as we see, not as God is. God doesn't have a plan. God doesn't go to his office and start designing things. If he designs a building, in other words, if he designs it to be 20 miles high, I can assure you that building will stand. Because God's will is God's will. But when we make plans, we are limited. There are bigger forces around us, and we've got to work within them. So we have certain knowledge, and we've got to be inside that kind of knowledge. Maybe that is enough on that point. I cannot follow. I'm skipping one line. The first line says, another thing that is going around in my mind, part of the shuffling, is about space and time. I cannot follow how space can be created. I can see how the things that are in space, such as planets, suns, comets, atoms, interstellar gas, etc., can be created. But if you remove all these things from the firmament, you have nothing left. And I mean nothing. And using the logical definition that we have been using, it doesn't exist. So, no, that's not correct. So, let me give you an example. Supposing I set out to go to visit the stars. I have the machine, I have the spacecraft to do that. And I go to visit the stars. And as I am going to the stars, God decides, he says to himself, I better remove all these stars. There'll be none of them, nothing. There'll be no sun or moon or to visit. I can't go to Mars or Venus or anything like that. And I put my head out of the window and look and say, I should be seeing this star by now, but there isn't one there. Will I be somewhere or not? Now, there are no stars, but what about me? Am I there? If I am there, I am in some location. And all locations were created by God. And if that location is in space, in outer space, The outer space was created by God, even though there are no stars and planets, and even though they all disappeared. So space then is something that can be, in which we can be. It can be measured. We have measurements of space. You can say it's 2 million. From this, I can write A and B. You can say star A and star B. And you can say that the distance between them is 2 million miles. I can say that. But if A, you do not doubt here that A is created and that B is created. But you think that if I remove A and B, there'd be nothing in between. Everything is disappearing. Well, what about the space between them? Who created that? That's a location. Is that uncreated? If it is uncreated, then we have to say, in the beginning was the Word and space, and they were both with God. Science today discusses warped space. How can something be warped if it doesn't exist? So I am saying that this is a rather basic question, and it would be nice to read up a little more about it if you are interested. But you will find that space is created. Space is something. And this piece of chalk has space inside it. If it did not have space in it, it wouldn't be chalk. You wouldn't be able to write. It's the metal has particles all very close together. Air has them as particles, and they are more apart. And the farther you go from the earth, the more sparse they become. It's something like that. But you can't say to me that there is no space. That space was uncreated. Maybe I don't have anything else to say. You understand? I don't know.
Astrophysicists talk about space as being composed of dark matter. It can be measured when it warps. If someone would want to read about that, I would recommend Dr. Hugh Ross. He's a astrophysicist that became Christian because of his studies of astrophysics. And he writes critiques and rebuttals to Stephen Hawking and Penrose and the famous astrophysicist that I got up.
Another question. You mentioned that angels are spirit and therefore are not bound by time and other constraints of matter. How then do we explain the past, present and future tense used of Lucifer's, that is to say Satan's, fate? He said, "I will ascend into heaven." He did fall, past tense, capital D-I-D. He did fall, past tense, as lightning from heaven. He is present, the God of this world, and he will be bound for 1,000 years. So we have words such as when he says, "I will ascend," obviously the argument as presented here is that he must have a future. Otherwise, what does the word "I will" refer to? But we have to realize, first of all, that spirit beings, if I may use the expression for the moment, to avoid the word angel. Oh, I'll use the word angel, doesn't matter. Angels do not climb stairs or freeze. They do not ascend or descend anything. And similarly, "I will ascend into heaven." The word heaven is not up so that you could ascend to it. But it's described in those terms in the Bible for a certain reason. So when he says, "I will ascend to heaven," it is those words, ascend and heaven, are not used in a literal way. That nobody's going to sort of put one leg higher than the other one and continue to. That's not what Satan was doing. But it is space talk. And that And once we start using space talk, we are required to use time references. The word will, in other words, has to be in there. Some kind of verb with tense, either present or past or future, will be used. But that is only for our sakes. It is not. So what am I saying now? I'm saying that the word will, the word is, the word what did, all these words are present, future, or past for our interests, not to describe what goes on in the actual realm of spirit. Now, we will see this later on again, so I'll leave it at that for the moment. Could you please explain the references to Christ at the right hand of God, especially in the light of Stephen's vision or of encouragement before his stoning in Acts 7? This vision led the Jews to their final act of killing him. Why would God give him this vision where there are recorded, they are recorded as two beings? Now, I don't know how many times we have to, I discussed that on the video. By the way, a number of the questions that you gave me, I put at the bottom, because if I got the impression that it was covered on the video, I said, why should I repeat things that I said on the video? Perhaps some people had not seen the video. I'm not saying that they didn't want to see it. I'm saying that there are some who have not yet received the video, the tapes. But I'll explain this one. The expression, what was the expression I gave? Oh yes, at the right hand of God. To be seated at the right hand of God is a Hebraic way of saying God. When Stephen said that, he meant, let me just find that in the Bible. I will go to a different place. Let me go to Matthew. Let's go to Gospel of Matthew, chapter 26. And verse 64. Notice in verse 63 that the high priest said, I adjure thee by the living God that thou tell us whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God. That's what he wanted to know. Christ's answer in verse 64 is, you have said, nevertheless thou hast said, nevertheless I say to you, hereafter shall ye see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. Verse 65. Then the high priest rent his clothes, saying, he has spoken blasphemy. So then it was enough, in other words, for the high priest to conclude from Christ's answer that he was the Son of God. So to be at the right hand of power, at the right hand of God, all expressions of that sort, they have a name in literary analysis. They are called, I write both the Greek word and the English word. Periphrasis. And in English, circumlocution. It's another way of saying the same thing. So if somebody says to you, supposing you ask somebody, are you the President of the United States? And he says, I live in the White House and my wife is called Hillary. That's a circumlocution. He's saying the same thing. he's saying yes to that theft, but in a different way. So it's another way of saying that it's a Hebrew way, it's a Hebrew circumlocution. We have a question here. We have a microphone.
Dr. Stavridis, I thought you said on the tape that the reason the high priest rent his clothes was because by making himself the Son of God, Christ was making two gods.
He was making himself equal with God, right? He was making himself equal with God, and the Jews would not tolerate that. God is only one. So if there is another one who is equal to him, surely that makes two as well. But if Christ had said, I am here by the Spirit of God, nobody would have been offended, because the prophets were there by the Spirit of God too. Now, I lost the question on this one. Yesterday I was with somebody who asked me about, I wrote in a tiny little piece of paper. Well, the question was, here it is. If angels are not in space, this is from the dinner table, I wrote it out. If angels are not in space, how was an angel confined to a space in Persia? That's in Daniel. So I like to look at that. Daniel chapter 10. And my purpose in going over it is to show that quite often we read problems into the text and we get mistakes out of them. Let's look at chapter 10, verse 7. And I, Daniel, alone saw the vision. For the men that were... Oh, wait a minute. We have water at room temperature. Isn't that nice? It's taken from the ocean, probably. Ah, very nice. I'll come again to Australia now. For the men that were with me saw not the vision, but a great quaking fell upon them, so that they fled to hide themselves. Verse 8. Therefore I was left alone and saw this great vision, and there remained no strength in me, for my comeliness was turned in me into corruption, and I retained no strength. Yet I heard a voice, and when I heard the voice, I was in a deep sleep on my face, and my face toward the ground. And behold, a hand touched me, and set me upon my knees, and upon the palms of my hands. Why? So that he could see the vision. You may think, well, he can see a vision any position he likes. But it's important for him to be on his knees to see the vision. Look at verse 12. Then he said to me, fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that you did set your heart to understand and to chasten thyself before God, your words were heard, and I am come for your words. So Daniel was trying to understand the plight of the Jews, why they were being chastened. And his prayers were heard, and therefore God sent an angel to help him. Look at verse 13. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia, many of us make a mistake here, and we think that that means an angel. I would like to know where we get that. He says, but the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. Now, why 21 days? Let me explain you why 21 days. Chapter 10 and verse 2. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. So, 3 weeks, 21 days. These are the 21 days that in which Daniel was weak. He was God knew that he was in a weakened position, and therefore sent an angel to fight his battles for him. When he says against the prince of the kingdom of Persia, that does not mean against another spirit, but against the king of Persia. The prince of the kingdom of Persia is the king of Persia. I don't think it's Cyrus, because Cyrus was a friend of the Jews, may have been Cambyses, the son of Cyrus, who was unfriendly towards the Jews. Now, why did he stay for 3 weeks? Because the king of Persia was making evil plans against Israel, so God sent an angel to help Daniel. You may say, how was the angel helping? Well, he was helping by watching over the affairs of Persia. I don't see anything about restraining him in Persia. I don't see anything. Somebody else asked me some few weeks ago, oh, where is the, there was a fight here between two angels. I don't see a fight at all, a struggle between two spirit beings. There is no confinement of an angel. So that is the answer. The answer is, let me find the question again. If angels are not in space, how was an angel confined to a space in Persia? It doesn't say confined. Look at verse 13 again. The prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 120 days. That means the powers that be in the nation were making plans against God's people, and this angel was trying to oversee that, because Daniel was not in a proper position to function in his office. And as I was mentioning earlier, that's, we make a mistake of reading that verse 13 as a reference to an angel, and we say, oh, an angel was withstanding another angel for 21 days, and I remained there, he says, with the kings of Persia. That's where the confinement is supposed to be. By the way, look at verse 20, you'll find why I say the prince is not an angel. Then said he, knowest thou wherefore I come unto thee? And now will I return to fight with the prince of Persia, and when I am gone forth, lo, the prince of Grecia shall come. The angels, how did he know that the prince of Grecia would come? Well, because angels are not in time. They know what is going to happen. That's the answer to that one. Spirit does not change. Lucifer was created a spirit, and he changed from initially being loyal to God to becoming rebellious. How can this be classified as a change? It cannot be classified as a change. You just wrote those words. Let me start again. You made a mistake in the writing of the question. Spirit does not change. That's true. Lucifer was created a spirit, yes, and he changed. I don't think so, because spirit doesn't change. From initially being loyal to God to becoming a rebellious, now that's a mistake. We're confusing here what happened with how it is described. Now, in the Bible, we have a description of Satan's rebellion. There is no doubt about that. But how it is described and what happened are two different things. Can this be classified as a change? The answer is no, it cannot. If so, now, when I say it cannot, I mean, if we were in heaven now, we would see no change. But in our terminology, the answer is yes, it can be described as a change. But in our terms, I'm going to clarify it in a minute. If so, how can we reconcile with the fact that spirit does not change? I think I need some space now. We put a lot of work into that board, so I better leave it. I'll erase this part. We don't need this either. Let's put here that supposing there is nothing but God. Maybe I'll say that this is God. Whole blackboard. And God is going to, is there, there is nothing else, just God. There is no universe. There are no angels. There is not, just God. We are happy so far. Now, God is going to create angels. These are the angels. There are millions of them. Are they in space? There is no space. There is no time. Is there time? There is no, let me make time. At some other I'll say God created the heavens and the earth. That's correct. So I'll make heavens and the earth. That's where the clock is. So the clock starts ticking. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The clock starts ticking once we have. So I said on the tape, on the video, that time is the measurement of change. This is how you make heavens exist. They are changing all the time. The earth exists, it's changing all the time. You are exist, you are changing. All matter is undergoing change constantly. And that is measured by the clock. So the clock is ticking. There is no clock up here. So I can separate that. I can say this is a different kind of existence. The angels are up here. They are not in, they are not within the heavens. They are not on the earth. They are spirit. How can they be in time? Now you say Satan was made. That's correct. Did he change? Well, change is down here. This is where change is. Change occurs down here. Maybe I should put a human being in there as well. Why not? Yeah. There is a human being. He is born at this time, and he dies there. So he is in time. But when he changes, he grows, and he, now angels don't do that. Angels do not have this kind of, they don't tick away from moment to moment as like the way in any way whatsoever. In other words, man has a body, he is in space. Man has a body, he is in time. The clock is ticking along the side. Now this man, he has thoughts. Let's put some thoughts inside him. Are those thoughts in time? No, they are not. That's where it gets complicated. But since this man is in time, we tend to think of these thoughts. These thoughts are perceived. in time. In other words, when I use my hearing, I hear you say something, express a thought. I hear it at 1 o'clock. I perceive it in time. But your thought is not in time. Your thought does not get younger or older with the clock. Your thought doesn't change. Your thought stays the same as always. It doesn't increase in size, in weight. It doesn't get smaller and smaller, wrinkled, and then die. It doesn't do that. So your thought stays a thought. But I perceive it in time. I am in time. My eyes are here, my ears are here, and I may... So here is a human being then that is complicated. He is in time and space, but he functions also he has a spiritual capacity to him, that he has spiritual capabilities. Now what would it take to have a thought in time? It would have to be something that goes on like this. This kind of procedure along the side of the clock. It gets it changes. Maybe it goes like that, and so on. To change it, a thought does not change. But the things that are in space, they do change. Somebody had a question on the back. Yes.
How do the thoughts get locked into our memory?
Now, I have studied only the Freudian system. I did not study Jung or anybody else. I know how Freud explained, but why would I be interested in explaining it? I don't know. The quickest answer is to say, I don't know. But I say, you want to say something on that?
I hate psychology questions. The latest theory is that memory is chemical, and it's a function of the chemistry of the brain. I don't know if that's helpful to you, but that's the latest research.
So you say, now what happened to the angels? Here's what happened to the angels. The angels were made with a will. Now that is important, because an angel has a choice now. He has an individuality, he has a particular will. He can make a decision whether he was made to be a ministering spirit, a servant. That's what he is. And he has a choice to obey God or not to obey God. He can do either. And once he makes some of them obey God and others disobey God. And since they are not in time, they are not in the same capacity as we are. You and I have things in us, in our life, which are potentially much higher than the angels. Because you have experiences. You and I have experience. We make mistakes. We can repent. We can change. We can ignore mistakes. We can say, that's forgiven. That's gone. Let's start again. They cannot do that. We can do that only because we are in time. This is a tremendous blessing, this clock that God has placed here, because we can make changes in our life. They cannot. You say, why did God make them that way? Because God wanted ministering spirits. And once they make a decision, they are living that decision. And these are the disobedience. Arrows don't go in any particular direction, just means they don't go in the same direction. So you say, they were created good. By that you mean the question, I think you mean that they were all obeying God. No, they were not. That's why I say we have to distinguish what really occurred from the way it is described. Yes, we have a question here.
Dr. Stavronides, at the point where those two arrows diverge, isn't that a point in time?
No, it is not. In time, time is down here. The clock is, the way I present it on the blackboard gives the impression that there is a linear motion. But that's only because I'm using lines.
So this choice of obedience or disobedience, did that take place at the moment the angels were created?
If I don't read too much into this taking place.
Yeah.
I mean, you said take place. I don't like the word place. But forget that for the moment. The answer is yes. In other words, they were made. They started, obeying, exercising their will. An angel was made, was created. He's got to decide. He has free will. He can decide to obey God or to disobey God. Some of them obeyed God and others did not. Yes.
I'm having a bit of difficulty understanding some of this, Dr. Stavronides, because as soon as we use the word created,
yes,
and we talk about something which wasn't there and then comes into existence, and if something...
Excuse me, you said something that wasn't there. Now, I don't... Look, in the church, I wouldn't quibble about that something wasn't there. Now, you may say, well, look, you're asking me to express myself.
Can I say it wasn't then?
Something that did not exist.
Yes.
I prefer to say did not exist, because it wasn't there.
Okay.
Because it may color the question.
Right. In other words, the angels didn't exist.
Right.
Then the angels came into existence because of
except creation. That we use the word then.
All right.
Look, I am going. See,
I'm quite happy, but I'm trying to wrestle with
right.
this because
if you can use these words then, there, while we are pointing down here. But I must insist that we be careful with those, because I wish I could make this point clear. Here is my position. You've got to understand my position now. I realize that you have a tough job because you have to go to your areas and answer people's questions. I know that, so I respect that highly. But now, the best service I can render is to point these things out right now in this room, and you can use it in the, as if I were with you while you're counseling with somebody, I wouldn't correct it. I would not. I would say you must have a reason for saying wasn't there and wasn't here. And quite often I do the same thing. I don't mind what words we use when we explain things to people, so long as we have it clear in our minds. And what I am doing now is trying to clarify it in other words, if I allow a question that is a wrong word, if in your thought the word there is allowed, or the word then, if in your concept those words pertain to this realm, they are the problem on which you based the wrong question. So I've got to cross them out now and say, by all means, use them now, but I've crossed them out.
Yeah.
In other words, I say, by all means, use them if you haven't got another word to put in. I think there is another word. I can say the angels did not exist forever, have not always existed. The angels were created. I can say that. I can say the angels were created. So was space created. Now that's correct. I don't say then. So I say the angels were not in existence. God created them. I don't use the word then. So it can't be expressed without these words.
Well, as soon as we use the word created,
yes,
I mean, we're talking about notions or ideas. As soon as you use the word created, you immediately consider, well, there wasn't a time, and as soon as something's created, it exists in time.
Right.
Now, I mean, logically, right. That is the case.
I have a question here that uses exactly the same words that you're using now.
Yes.
Let me read this question. I don't know, saying it's your question. I don't know whose question it is. May I read this one? Because it may be, it will help us. Since since they are not spatial, I don't know who is what we are talking about. He says, also as covered in video number 11, since they are not spatial, I'm reading everything now. I think he's talking about the angels. Maybe we separated the question, the shuffling. Since they are not spatial, angels don't have choices in a linear way. That's correct. What does this mean? There was a time when they did not exist. No, there wasn't. There wasn't a time. There wasn't a time. The time is down here. Up here, there was no time. You and I want to think of everything in terms of time, and that is the problem. And when I say, no, we can't do that, then you say, oh, you are an ogre. So the truth is, there wasn't a time. Now, I realize you put the word time in quotation marks. I don't know what that means. You can put it in between the aeroplanes, if you like. I don't know what happens to a word when you put it in quotation marks. There was a time when they did not exist. No, there wasn't one. They were all created, true. And they were all good. No, they weren't. Because if you put it in there, then you will want to change them from good to bad. And I'll say, no, they don't change. Then, where did that then come from? That word then belongs to another world. You're borrowing words from one world and using them in another world. The Bible does that. The Bible does it because that's the only way available to describe what really happened in terms that are meaningful for us. What would I say to people about Satan? I would say he rebelled against God. How it is described in the Bible is described in spatial terms and in terms of time and space. He says, you sat on the coals and you appreciated the stones, you know, the precious stones. Well, Satan doesn't appreciate stones, and he doesn't, a fire doesn't affect him anyway. So what is that? Yeah, we've got to realize that the way it is expressed is one thing. What really happened is another. Then, comma, later, comma, it's not later. Lucifer and those who followed him made the choice to rebel against God. That's false. That choice is now fixed. Now that's correct. So now we start again on the right path. There was a state and time when they were righteous and then decided to become evil. Isn't this linear? Yes, it is. It is linear. That's why it's inaccurate. The truth is, angels had a will. They could obey or rebel. Some obeyed, they are the holy angels, and some disobeyed, and they are the evil angels. And they live with that decision. We have a question. We have the microphone here. Sorry.
Right. Okay, Dr. Stavridis, in trying to not describe it in spatial terms, but trying to describe it hopefully as it is or occurred or whatever the word would be.
It is or occurred. Occurred is past tense.
Okay.
Is now.
So it's created past tense.
Yes.
So it's created
right.
Past tense.
I'm joking.
Yeah, I know. So am I. God, so trying to express it now. God created Lucifer.
No, I don't like that.
Okay.
Because the word Lucifer is has another connotation for us. You mean God created an evil being?
No.
It's loaded. In other words, the word Lucifer loads it. When you say God created the being who is termed Lucifer,
would that you prefer that?
Yeah, I'd be happy with that.
Okay, fine. Okay, so let's start again. So God created the being termed Lucifer.
I don't mind putting it on the board so you can see what I mean. I mean, here is a being. I'll make him like a human being now.
Yeah.
So here is an angel. No, I would not. I'll make him different. I'll put a, you know. How's that? That's an angel.
Right.
Certainly this one looks totally different from this one. That's Lucifer. Now here is the exercise of the will. This angel has a will. The only difference is, it is not, I do not mean that to space them out this way. It's not true, in other words, that the angel is here and his will is over there. And, so this is a spatial, you know, I'm not suggesting that there are three things here. I'm suggesting there's only one.
Right.
But I haven't got a way of doing it all one unless I put one on top of the other. So this is the angel. He has will, a free will. He can exercise his will.
Right.
He is not in time.
Right. So.
Is he good or bad? He is neither. He has to decide.
Right.
Up to him.
Okay.
But we tend to think that this one is good. He has a good character.
Okay. So trying to describe it, God created an angel.
Right.
With a will, called Lucifer.
With a will to be either a Lucifer or to disobey or to obey.
Okay. So God created an angel with a will who could have been Lucifer but turned out to be Satan in spatial terms.
I don't think you meant that, but...
Oh, yes, he did.
No, I couldn't have meant it. Okay. If
you did.
If it was wrong, I couldn't have meant it. So.
Not if it was.
Look, the point I'm making is that in most people's minds, the word Lucifer has ceased to mean the light bringer. You are using the word Lucifer in that sense. You're using the word Lucifer as a light bringer, in a good sense. Mm-hmm. All right. But I am saying that that is. Even that is not correct, because God
willed himself,
yes,
to be Satan.
God created an angel who exercised his will in a particular way. Right. Who is next?
Just regarding the creation of angels with a will, God is unlimited. Yet he creates something that limits itself.
Oh, no.
With the will.
He creates something that is... All of God's creations are limited. All of them.
Thank you. Just a question on Ezekiel 28:15 and how we can then explain that to the membership.
Right. That passage and the one in Isaiah, we are in Australia now, they do not speak explicitly of Satan. If you study them, you will find they refer to a king on the face of the earth who receives criticism from God for his action. And God says, and in describing that, those his rebellion, in other words, he uses language taken from what happened here. So those passages are mixtures of something that refers to a human king in terminology that includes the rebellion of the angel. Now that's what I would say to somebody. Now if somebody says to me, well, read it exactly how you should read it. Well, I have to take time to explain Hebrew constructions. But the end result is this. In a church sermon, I would not insist on theologizing. In other words, I would refuse to enter into a theology of this nature in the church service or in counseling members. I see this only as ministerial, only for our consumption, for our understanding. But how we should explain it to the people, I think we should explain it in terms of time and space. Yes.
In view of what we've been discussing, then it would be incorrect for us to say, would it not, that Lucifer influenced the rest of the angels in his decision, and if that statement that I just made is correct, then Revelation 12:9, which talks about him drawing the third of the angels, doesn't mean to imply that he influenced a third of the angels. Is this correct?
Obviously, there are different kinds of different ranks of angels. We read that in Colossians chapter 1. There are different powers and principalities, and these are different ranks. And exactly, let's suppose for the moment that in exercising his will in a particular way, gave the green light to other people to exercise it, to other angels to exercise it the same way. I don't preclude that. That explains why the other angels followed him.
If you leave the concept of time out of these events,
yes,
then we cannot really say about one event influencing another event,
no,
or coming before or after another,
right,
event.
Yes. Yeah, we cannot. I mean, that's why now you and I are discussing it in temporal terms. I haven't got any other terms to exclude. That's why I would refuse to explain it in a sermon. I would not mind writing it up. If I had to write it up for the PGR, it would take me a long time to think the right words to say, but it would be for the ministers only, not for the members. What is wrong in saying to the members that here is that Satan was created? He was created to be a ministering servant, as a minister of God, the same as all the other angels. And each angel was created with a will, with a choice of obeying God or disobeying God. And in exercising their choice, that choice is forever. It is timeless, without time, and therefore they cannot change. Change is inside this realm. What is wrong with that? I don't understand what is difficult with that. Maybe, I don't know if I answer, I don't want to do. Yeah, that's right. Oh, you have the mic. He has, yeah, the microphone first.
Yeah, I got it first.
In any case, he and I swam together. So
that's right. Would it be safe to say that God created the angels before space and time, and,
yeah,
that they made their decision before space and time, and because of that, their will is set just like God's will is set?
Right. They are made before, but I don't like the word before. However,
yeah,
see, there is no before. There is no before space. Before space, the meaning is meaningless, but I will allow this time. We allow it because you mean if I come to here, I don't find the angels created. I don't find within these steps. I have to go outside, above, but these are spatial terms, this line, to find where, to find the creation of the angels. And that is so. But for the moment, let's say yes, before. They were before the time and space. They are not in time. Their decision is everywhere, in the sense that it's not limited. The decision is like that. And they live their decision everywhere and in all time. So we go to the next question. How can we explain God's decision and will? By the very process of decision making, there is a point when the decision... What is this about now? I think the question is, does God decide anything at all? There is a little paragraph above. God has no past, future, and so on. How can we explain God's decision and will? By the very process of decision making, there is a point when, that's time, of course, the point when the decision has not been made. He's talking about God's decision now. The decision has not been made. I think he's making, let's take that point. There's a time when the decision, there is a point when, he avoids the word time and puts the word point. There is a point when, there isn't a point. Point, all points are down here. So, there is a point when the decision has not been made. You see, that's not true. I cannot allow that because God does not make new decisions. I know it's difficult for us. We want to think of God in the terms that we are. I make a decision, tomorrow I'll make another decision. And I'll talk about the last decision. God doesn't make decisions like that in time, one after another. And then a point where it has been made, or that all that is untrue. If God does not decide, or have will, if God does not decide, he doesn't decide, God doesn't decide, God knows, and God wills. See, if God says, let's make a decision, and God says, I will make a universe. If he says that, the universe is made, because he says, the will of God is a reality. If that is not the case, then he is not God. If God says, I will, and then makes a universe, the universe is made. If God does not decide, then there is no contradiction. Right. There is no contradiction. The Bible reveals he, in fact, does decide. And, all right. The Bible reveals that he does decide. But what would it take for us really to grasp that the Bible is written in a certain language for our benefit, and it is not a book on theology to tell us in a disciplined manner what God does in heaven? Does not this imply that he must in some respect have both past and future as well as present? No, because he doesn't decide. But in ordinary speech, I would say I don't mind discussing God's eternal nature in terms of human time and space decision. I said it's all right to speak of God's plan. But by that I mean what I see developing, not what God needs. God doesn't need it. I need notes on these questions. See, you send me a question, I put a little note on the bottom. I make a plan. I need a plan so I remember, because I'm limited. But God doesn't need it. He knows everything. Another question. If actions were known to God ahead of time, now here is the thing. If actions were known to God ahead of time, Adam and Eve could never have taken of the tree of life, and all the pain that followed could not be avoided. That is false. I'll explain it in a minute. Judas could not be blamed for his action, and the outcome was foreordained, if God knew it all. According to this thing, God is outside time. God knows our past, our present, and our future. And he's outside time. So do the angels. They're outside time. Everyone else in the world, God, number three, everyone else in the world, God might as well resurrect them at their time and not worry about their calling. Now these questions come from the notion that if God knows ahead of time where we will be, then He might as well start resurrecting us, because we have no choice. He has taken our privilege away. If he knows ahead of time that at the age of 65 I will kill my grandmother, that's how we think, then when I come 65 I have no option. I've got to go and take a knife and kill my grandmother. That's not what is happening. I would like to give you an illustration to show that foreknowledge does not mean control. Supposing that we have a road, two roads, one road actually, like that. It's bending. And there are two cars. One car going this way and another car going this way. In this very narrow road, it can only take one car. And both cars are going at 65 miles an hour. You use miles here or kilometers? 105 kilometers an hour. And you are in a helicopter up here. There's your helicopter. So you're up there and you're looking down. You can see that and you can see him. And you say to yourself, I know what's going to happen. You know that if they keep going, you know, in this one narrow, you know they're going to collide. But your knowing what will happen doesn't mean that you control it. You don't have a control. They still are in charge of their will, of their steering wheel. They decide. You see that. It's a case of somebody who has foreknowledge, but he doesn't control. In other words, if God has given us free will, we hold the steering wheel, we control our lives, we drive the car as we like, but God is outside time. Whatever we do is our decision. Maybe that's enough on that question. A question, yes, sir.
I'd just like to pursue that one a little bit. Good. Dr. Stavranides. I'm just thinking of past notions where we would talk about divine intervention in a situation. The helicopter pilot can't do anything unless they've got radios and he's able to contact them by radio and tell them. We'll leave that out. But God looks down and he can, we might say, decide that I won't allow this to happen even though it's inevitable. What's your comment on that?
So, the question is, does God intervene in the world? The answer is yes, he does. Otherwise, there'd be no point in our praying to him. Does God know the outcome of that does he know what we need before we ask him? The answer is yes, he does. He knows before we ask him what we need. Does he know what problems we are going to encounter down the road? Yes, he does. He knows that. But he will not allow us, notice that. He will not allow, that means he intervenes. Right? He will not allow us to be suffered, to be tempted beyond what we are able to bear. So he does intervene. It's a problem. This is a problem because when somebody says, oh yes, I know everything, God is outside time. See, this is all divided really. I should divide it like this, shouldn't I? These are centuries. And God is beyond all centuries. It's very difficult for us to think of that. Yes. We have the microphone.
I have no difficulty accepting that. Just from the aspect, though, of God knowing all things like that, with regards to then him knowing what our end result is, why would God call someone when he knew that they were going to fail?
And why would he call somebody who he knows will make it? Why doesn't he say, look, here, this one will make it, so why do I call him at all?
Well,
I don't understand your question.
He could have left that to the white throne judgment. That's the point that I'm saying. There's more of a chance of him not failing.
I'm trying to fathom the question. You understand the question? Right, I mean, Has God ever called anyone who will not make it? Is that what you ask? Are you asking me if God?
Well, what I'm saying is that, okay, if God knows they're going to fail at when He calls them, say, in this age, if He knows they're going to do that, why not leave it till the next age?
But how does God? But here is the problem. There's a problem with the question. You see, you are asking me, why does God call somebody if He knows they will fail? If He knows they will fail, that means He knows they will be called. Otherwise, they won't fail. How can they fail unless they be called? Look, I mean, I won't try and make. The question I am asking him is, why does God call somebody when God knows that man will fail? If God knows that that man will fail, He knows that that man will be called. Otherwise, this failure would be impossible. Right? So you're asking me a question that...
I will have that question asked to me. I don't have too much of a problem with it personally.
Right.
I'll have that question asked to me, and I would have difficulty answering it.
Right.
That's the purpose behind the question.
Here's my answer to that person, and I say, look, why would God allow you to buy a car if He knows that you are going to sell the car? Well, how can you sell the car unless you bought it, unless you have it? It's the same sort of question. I think you mean, why would God call somebody if He knew that if He were to call him, then that man would not make it? So you have to put it all in hypothetical terms. I don't know what answer I would give to the member. In other words, you're asking what simple answer. I would have to think about it.
Yeah, that's the point.
I don't. Yeah.
That's my purpose behind the question.
That's why you are called to be the best.
Well,
yeah, but why would God call? See, there is something built into the question that is not healthy. The question. It's like the one which says, can God lift a weight, make a weight big enough He cannot lift? It's like that. The inconsistency is built into the question in such a way that you cannot answer the question. I don't know if the question can be phrased correctly to avoid this conflict. See, what I am doing now is I'm trying to answer the questions that we are asking, not the questions that the members are asking. I don't know the answer to the members' question, but maybe if you and I thought together, maybe we can produce one. I don't mind giving you some thought, but I haven't got the answer at the moment, a quick and easy one, because my answer is the question is built, is flawed in that it contains the seeds of its own destruction. That's what's wrong with it. Now, how do I say that in a nice and plain way that a member can understand it? I haven't got a clue. I need to sit down and think about it.
I said I would answer this way if it works, and you tell me if this works. For those who are not satisfied with the grace that God offers through quiet Christ, then they'll have to deal with the justice of God. For if you refuse God's mercy, then you automatically get what's left, is justice. Is that too pedantic?
Oh, yes. No, you are saying that God calls them in His mercy and He wants them to make it.
Right.
He, as Mr. Kajun is saying, that God calls them in His mercy and He wants them to make it. If they decide not to make it, that's their own choice, but God is love and He wants them to make it. So you have split the question, in other words. And maybe that's the way to go. Yes. Notice that He doesn't have you on there.
I'm on the air.
All right.
We've already accepted that God does not make decisions in a linear way, one at a time. That automatically says that we don't get called one at a time. That God has willed that people be called.
Right.
And that under given circumstances, people have an opportunity to respond, and when they do, other things take place, which leads them to conversion. So if not, in that sense, that answers that question.
I think so. I think, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Yes, that's, you know, in other words, you're going into behind the question now. You're saying, well, look, the assumption is that God calls each one of us. The assumption is, I feel like it went over that on tape. The tape also, I said, he doesn't go around accepting this one. This one I don't like, I reject him. You know, you're not being called now, so stay down there. And I call you. It's not that way. I think I mentioned that on the video already. So that's a good point, thank you. Yes.
Wondering it with the question that we had before, with what Mr. Vicotsky just said there too. Maybe we could phrase it and say, well, God wouldn't call someone who couldn't make it.
Maybe God
would not call someone who he knew would not make it. Maybe that, I mean, that's only half an answer, but maybe it would help. Good, good last.
Are events in time changeable anyway? You've got that paradox where if I was to be able to travel back in time and kill my father, then I wouldn't have existed in order to go back and kill my father in the first place. So are events in time changeable anyway? That's what I'm asking. And it bears on Gavin's question, which I think is a good question and I worry about as well.
I don't think they understood you. Oh. He hears Back to the Future. Can we go to the next question now? What time are we supposed to finish? 5:30? 5:30. We have not. So I have the questions for this thing now. That's the next one. You right? 3? I don't have any questions for 3. Right, I don't have any questions for number 3. None of you has asked a question for number 3. If you have questions, then perhaps we could start with them next time, or you want to ask something now?
A simple question.
Right.
God is spirit, is not a plurality of beings. Is it correct to say that God is a singular being?
Is God a singular being? So the spirit is a singular being. I don't know what the word singular means when you put it next to the word being. Maybe it's...
That's the question.
Yes, well, can I think about that and discuss it tomorrow? Because a singular being, I have to think about. I think it probably is all right, but I'm thinking now in precise terms. Why don't I think about it and start with that, with number 3 tomorrow? I write the question down. Any announcements, Mr. Matthews? No announcement. Right? Thank you.
Just before we finish, we do have one or two.